Welcome to the Toastmasters podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody. This is Greg Gazin. Have you ever wondered why something you've said or done with well-meaning and kindness can come across as dismissive or even disrespectful? Often it's not the intent, but interpretation. We naturally communicate through cultural norms or lenses that we rarely think about, and those differences can easily lead to misunderstanding and conflict. In this episode, we speak with an expert in cross-cultural and intercultural communication who will help us learn how to untangle those cultural knots and help turn misunderstanding into meaningful connection. Our guest today is Maria Goraitenandia, a leadership communication strategist, speaker, and author of Untangling Communication, How Leaders Can Strengthen Communication, Resolve Conflict, and Build High-Performing Teams. Maria helps leaders and teams untangle communication. I love that word, untangle. Untangle communication breakdown so they can work better together and get results. Maria is an active Toastmaster member, having joined Central Florida Facilitators in Orlando in 2023, where she served as the Vice President of Membership, and she's now the Sergeant in Arms for the Professional Speakers Virtual Club. Shaped by growing up across cultures, Maria brings more than two decades of global experience working across cultures, industries, and leadership levels, translating real-world communication challenges into practical insights leaders can use immediately. And when she's not helping teams untangle communication at work, she's trying not to get overwhelmed scrolling through LinkedIn, she tells me, or resisting the urge to check Life 360 to see where her adult kids are. Maria's article, Untangling Cultural Knots, How to Turn Misunderstandings into Bridges Between Cultures, is in the February 2026 issue of the Toastmaster magazine. Coming to us today from Orlando, Florida, Maria Goraitenandia, welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Thank you so much, Greg. It's such a pleasure and honor to be here with you today.
I love the terms cultural knots and untangling. How did you come up with this phraseology?
The concept of untangling communication is something that came to me probably a couple of years ago, because when I did a deep dive into what exactly it is that I do and the value that I try to pass on to my clients, in a nutshell, that's basically what I do. I try to help teams and leaders figure out how they can untangle those knots so that they can get things done, whether those knots are not knowing how to give somebody feedback or how to manage a difficult conversation or resolve conflict or understand somebody from a different culture, what they actually mean. All of those, you can figure that they are an analogy for a knot, and the way that we can make that conversation or that communication process flow into one nice, clean strand is by having the patience to see where the knot is originating, one end to the other.
It's a great visual. You can picture it in your mind. And equally so, the article is so relevant because if we think about it, these cross-cultural moments, for lack of a better term, these aren't things that are rare anymore. They're just pretty much woven, right? Using the yarn or string analogy, they're woven into our daily conversations. And even though we've been used to this for quite a while, these well-meaning exchanges can just easily go sideways.
Yes, that's absolutely true. And what you say is also right on the dot, because whereas maybe 20 or 30 years ago, our intercultural interactions might be limited maybe to an expat or small teams. Nowadays, we see that most of us, due to the advent of social media or even just the reality of global companies, we see that most of us are working cross-culturally now, even with a customer service representative who might be helping us in on the other side of the planet, but we are interacting cross-culturally now every day.
I really enjoyed the article because to illustrate your message, you actually opened up with a real world story or a real life scenario between Pedro and Owen. And I understand that those are not their real names.
No.
Perhaps to kick us off, can you just describe that little scenario and then we can sort of work through it?
Yes. The story started out because I was coaching, we'll call him Pedro. he was an executive who was going to be completing a foreign assignment for a few years in the U.S. He's originally from Mexico. And he was telling me that on a recent business trip, he needed to get something approved by one of his American colleagues. He ran over to the office of Owen, who was sitting there behind his desk speaking on the phone. Pedro thought he would be justified in walking into his office after Owen didn't make eye contact with him and tapping him on the shoulder and putting some papers in front of Owen. Owen did not respond how Pedro would have liked and pretty much told him that he was busy speaking on the phone and and he turned his back to Pedro, and Pedro was extremely hurt and offended because he felt that Owen just didn't care about anything. And from then on, Pedro decided to avoid Owen at all costs. So it was one of these situations where, sadly, there was a cultural misunderstanding, which escalated to the point where the whole professional relationship was being affected.
So one interaction can make a huge difference. So in your mind, who was rude and what were Pedro and what were Owen seeing or hearing?
That is the million-dollar question, because when I tell anybody about this story, I will have the Pedro team of people who will say, oh my gosh, Owen was so insensitive and how could he turn his back on his colleague? He was so rude. You know, where is his empathy? And then I'll have the Owen team who say, oh my goodness, Pedro was so rude. What does he think? You know, getting in Owen's face, that was so disrespectful. Doesn't he understand that you can't just come in and invade somebody's privacy in their space? So it comes down to, what is it that you are giving more priority to when it comes to your cultural values, which sometimes we don't even realize we have, because culture is not something we're born with. It's something that we learn and we share. And it usually starts from your family and then it expands outward to your community, your school, all the people who surround you. And you are like a fish in water. Your parents and your friends and your teachers, they teach you what is respectful and what is not. Because let's face it, we all understand the term respect. It may be a universal concept. Mm-hmm. But how do you show respect to somebody else? That's where you get into trouble, because what can be respectful to you can be disrespectful to me, because these are the norms and patterns that I follow within my society and my community to show respect. Whereas in this culture or this community, it actually is the opposite. Anything from interruptions to body language to eye contact, all of these things vary immensely and they carry such heavy meaning.
Are there fundamental differences in the two cultures, maybe in the workplace culture?
Well, when it comes to differences, there are fundamental, as you say, differences between different perceptions and priorities that different cultures give different situations. For example, there are cultures that give priority to task. They're more task-oriented, more doing-oriented, especially in a work environment. You also have cultures that tend to be more relationship-oriented. So what does that mean? It doesn't mean that a task-oriented person doesn't care about other people or relationships. It simply means that when it comes to their communication style or what they give priority to, is going to be pragmatic and practical, having more respect for time and privacy, as was the case with Owen, and that's what they're going to value. Whereas somebody who's more relationship-oriented will be very focused on creating rapport, having, I would say, even saving face, being careful with how things are said, how they're worded in order to keep harmony with the other person. And then the secondary thing will be getting to the task or the objective. In this case, we can see Pedro was assuming that Owen would have his same values and would give priority to his obvious anxiety about getting something done that was on a deadline. And he figured that he would have priority over the conversation Owen was having over the phone. And he was bitterly disappointed when that wasn't the case. Whereas Owen was giving priority to certain structure because, again, he was focusing on task. His assumption was that Pedro would understand that he was first taking care of the person on the phone and that Pedro couldn't assume that he would be able to jump in front of the queue to get an answer from him. These kind of things usually are the ones that can cause conflict if you're going on different assumptions as to how you're going to be interacting with somebody. And you have different cultures that tend to be more naturally oriented towards relationships, like most of Latin America, Asia, Africa. We've got a lot of different countries that tend to be a little bit more relationship oriented. And of course, we've got more task oriented cultures, US, Canada, parts of Western Europe. It simply means that the priority, again, all of these things that we've learned and shared with our culture are going to be coming out into the forefront when we interact with other people.
What you're sharing here about different cultures, it sounds like it can also apply not necessarily to cultures, but it could also apply to diversity. It could also apply to generations, it sounds like.
Yes, for sure. It's very interesting when it comes to even among men and women. There have been many sociologists in the past that have talked about, like Deborah Tannen and many others, that talk about how women tend to be socialized to give priority to relationships. Men tend to be socialized in a way to give more importance to tasks. And that's, I don't know if you remember, like 20 some years ago, that book, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. Remember that?
Dr. John Gray. Yeah.
Yes. So you find that even there, you can see that there are differences also with culturally, that's part of culture as well, that you can see how men and women might differ in the way that they approach conversations. And of course, the generational aspect as well. One of the things I mention in my book is precisely that generational element when it comes to synchronous versus asynchronous communication. We find that with the advent of the cell phone and social media, people started migrating towards asynchronous communication and multitasking. So I send you a little message, and in the meantime, I'm doing something else, and then I'll come back. I can crowdsource my response to you if I want to be more clever. Ultimately, there's pros and cons to this type of shift in communication. I remember reading Harris and Grammarly put together a poll on the state of business communication a couple of years ago. It stated that there is, in the United States, there is probably a $1.2 trillion waste in bad communication because people are probably wasting about 8 hours out of their week on written communication that goes nowhere. So I think that with the millennial generation, the heavy emphasis on written communication via text and other platforms made it so that it was a lot more comfortable to send that text and be done with it rather than have the continuity that Gen Xers and boomers had with the real-time communication. And there are also articles that talk about this phone phobia where millennials, probably maybe millennials are getting over it, but still, like millennials, Gen Z, they actually get a little nervous about having to perform on real time and deal with it, for example, with a stranger or resolve a problem over the phone with somebody they don't know.
And let's not get into the hashtags and the emojis.
Or the okay boomers.
So the situation with Pedro and Owen, what was the result? What happened?
In my conversation with Pedro, the first step was basically to let him understand that even though he felt very betrayed or hurt by Owen's behavior, it wasn't that Owen was the bad guy. It was just that his expectations had been unrealistic. Mm-hmm. I told him one of the things that he hadn't been able to see was, do you see how maybe you're walking into his office while he was on the phone could have put him in an uncomfortable situation, because I know that he was expecting Owen to behave like his colleagues in Mexico, which would have been putting the phone down and asking him, you know, what is it? Once he realized that what he did could have been misconstrued, and the fact that I told him, look, Pedro, basically what you did was walk into this guy's office and he felt like you reached into his pocket and pulled out his wallet and he kind of felt violated. And Pedro was like, what? And I said, yes. It's like, but that's not what I meant to do. Of course, we don't mean to offend anybody, but we forget that the way that we were raised by our parents is not the same way somebody else was raised by their parents. And we were taught very different things. Even if we speak the same language, that's a whole other story. I have people in Latin America that assume that since everybody speaks Spanish, everybody has the same culture and nothing could be further from the truth. So once he realized that his behavior was construed as aggressive, he realized this had been a big miscommunication, and he was a lot more sympathetic to his colleague and no longer judged him so harshly. I could even see his body language changing when we were talking about this. So his vow to never speak to Owen again seemed to disintegrate once we got through that.
If you have two people that are together and this happens, how would they go about fixing it? What does the process look like?
Well, the first thing is you have to have a desire to want to fix it. I can't tell you how many times I've worked with teams and leaders, and at times someone will say, well, I've had this conflict with one of my colleagues, and I think we're at the point of no return. And my question is, are you going to have to continue working with them? Do you want things to flow in a better way? If you do, then it behooves you to decide to have that difficult conversation. So the first thing is a will to want to improve things, not just leave things the way they are and escape and avoid. The second thing, I think, is once you get over that discomfort, is approaching the conversation with clarity, but also with empathy and a clear objective. In that sense, I would probably recommend to either one, in this case, I really spoke to Pedro, I would say, you know, why not go in, give a little bit of context. This is part of my clear methodology, where if you just, you start off by conveying a little bit of context, it helps the other person align with you much easier than if you just start saying what you want and how you want it done. So that context gives a little bit of the background, the motivation. It's answering the question of why. And then once you do that, the conversation can flow a little bit more naturally and harmoniously.
Well, since we started talking about your CLEAR methodology, you might as well continue all the way through the acronym.
Okay. Acronym, CLEAR. You start out first with that context, the why. That first step makes things a lot easier, just because if you skip that, then you're pretty much just jumping into the what and the how. Mm-hmm. So starting out with that, for example, in this case, Pedro might be able to say to Owen, you know, I really would like for us to have a conversation. I feel we might have gotten off the wrong foot. I'd love for us to make sure that we are not stepping on each other's toes, whatever, but just say, you know, this is where I'm coming from and this is why I'm approaching you. Once you convey your context, you're ready to listen to the other person to see what they have to say and listen with empathy. So asking lots of open-ended questions helps you understand the other person's point of view. Of course, making sure that as you are listening, you can paraphrase or use your own words to draw the next point. It's a dynamic process of listening and asking questions. That's the listen and empathize piece. As you are listening, there's probably going to be information coming into your brain, which is going to help you shift your perspective. So that's where you're going to start to adjust.
There's the A, yeah.
That's the A. You're adjusting and understanding something you may not have understood before. And then finally, you're able to reframe. You can speak the other person's language or propose a solution. And then you can, of course, start all over again.
So clear. Context, listen, empathy, adjust, and reframe.
Exactly.
We'll certainly put a link to that information in the show notes. I'm still curious, going back to the original story, from Owen's perspective, did he see himself as being sort of rude?
I never spoke to Owen, but I am assuming that the whole reason why he turned his back to Pedro was because he felt that Pedro was way too aggressive. Because even by American standards, you don't usually turn your back to somebody. That was his way of establishing a barrier, a boundary. He just felt like this guy just walked in, got in his face, and was demanding his attention. And he probably felt like he was the wronged party. Maybe if I had a chance to speak to Owen, do you think you were rude in turning your back to Pedro? He may say, well, okay, yeah, maybe it was, but this guy was just too intense and I had to get away from him. So that would be my assumption without having the benefit of speaking to Owen.
So much for the open door policy.
Right. And here, this is the thing. And as an American, I think I'm allowed to say this. We tend to say, oh, open door policy, come in anytime. But it comes with certain caveats, right? Because even if the door is open, there are exceptions. And in this case, I had to explain to Pedro, when Americans say open door policy, if they're talking on the phone, it means there's an invisible force field on their door and you can't just walk in. You have to make eye contact from outside and wait for them to make some kind of nonverbal gesture that it's okay to come in. And he's like, well, how am I supposed to know that? And I said, well, see, that's the thing. Who's going to tell you that unless you've been in a culture for a while, you learn all of these subtleties. Nobody knows everything. It's like a big iceberg. There's only the stuff that's above the surface, which is kind of small and which you can observe with your eyes or pick up with your five senses. But you've got the huge segment that's underneath the surface, which takes years and lots of experience to learn and figure out.
Yeah. Sometimes you can use hand signals or... A former colleague and good friend of mine, Harvey Taphorn, who lives in Calgary, we were sharing an experience. He was sharing an experience about how when he was in an office environment and they did have that open door policy, but he needed his own personal time where if he was in the middle of something, he wasn't to be disturbed. So he put headphones on. People knew that if they walked up to his office and he had the headphones on, it's not now, come back later. And that actually worked.
I've heard that. I've heard other people say the same thing. It kind of looks like you're talking to somebody on the phone. And nowadays, that's basically what you do. But it also signifies, give me a little time. Because sometimes, mm-hmm. Here's the thing. In Mexico, people might feel embarrassed to turn somebody away because it's relationship oriented. So sometimes you actually have somebody who's actually on the phone and they'll wave somebody in. But the assumption is, and you can go the other way, and I've heard of this too, where they'll say, sure, sure, come in. The other person will be sitting there, but they're held hostage while the other person's finishing their conversation because they don't want to turn this up. They don't want to reject the person who has been wanting to speak to them. Now, if you're a relationship-oriented person, you're fine with waiting, you know, and maybe if the other person's on hold for a bit, having segmented conversations by bits and pieces. But if you are a more task-oriented person, that's going to drive you nuts. And you'll just be like, you know what, I'll just come back later when you can give me 100% of your attention. Relationship-oriented cultures are fine with doing 50% of your attention or 30% of your attention. Task-oriented cultures want 100% of your attention. And that's where the big difference lies. And we could see it with Owen. Owen was like, no, you're not allowed to have 50% of my attention because I owe it to the person on the other side of my phone conversation to give them 100% of my attention. You can't just come in and yank 50% of my attention away from this person. That's like stealing from them.
It's either black or white, and there's no 50 shades of gray.
Exactly.
I'm just curious, you mentioned how you came about your branding, but I'm curious, you grew up in a very multicultural environment. You lived in Mexico and you lived in the United States. I'm just curious, did you have a moment that led you onto this path?
Oh, Greg, I've had so many like foot in my mouth moments, you would not believe. But I grew up as what some people call a third culture kid. My father was an executive, a finance executive who got transferred around a lot when I was a child. So I made lots of mistakes all the time. You have to learn how to laugh at yourself and not take yourself too seriously and be resilient and be willing to learn and move on. I think one of the things that I observed was that my dad had a hard time when he lived in Mexico because he was a Cuban man. And even though he spoke Spanish, he went in with lots of assumptions, thinking that Mexicans would be just like Cubans. And nothing could have been further from the truth. When he had those difficult moments where people wouldn't understand him and he couldn't understand others, I remember him complaining. And one of the things he would complain about was that people were too sensitive in Mexico because his style was very blunt and direct, as Caribbeans tend to be. And when people would not respond very well or would be annoyed or angered or give him the cold shoulder, he'd be like, you know, what do I gotta, you gotta treat people with baby powder here. What the heck? You know, what's going on? So I think that stayed with me. And I realized, especially as an adolescent, I was picking up on a lot of the cues, probably because when you're younger, you learn languages easier. You learn a lot of these cultural nuances easier. You realize that communication isn't just about the language. It's about the tone and the nuance. And probably as I have developed in my professional career, there's part of me that wants to reach out and help the executives like my dad to make their lives easier and untangle those knots to make things a little bit easier for them so they can move forward and achieve the objectives that they establish for themselves and for their teams.
That certainly makes a lot of sense why you do what you do. You're obviously a lifelong learner. Out of curiosity, what brought you to Toastmasters and what's something that you've taken away from it?
I had heard about Toastmasters before. In this stage in my professional career, I decided to explore speaking to larger audiences besides my corporate clients. I realized that, for example, keynoting is very different than training. Shorter programs are different than longer programs. There's a whole different set of skills that you need to develop. And I thought, now's as good a time as ever, right? So I joined my local Toastmasters, which has been an absolute thrill. I can see why people become addicted to Toastmasters and why there's so many people who have been in it for decades. I guess that my learning has been, there's always going to be people who can support you and you can always learn from them. And another thing that I've learned is not to be shy about asking for help. That has been a great learning for me.
That's awesome. I want to ask you about this piece at the end of the article. You say, the next time you feel dismissed or offended by someone's reaction, resist the urge to label it as disrespect. Can you share a little bit about that process?
Yes, I think this is key in any kind of interpersonal interaction. I think it's something that we are in great need of today, especially because it's so easy to jump on, for example, social media and be an absolute jerk, right? People say things that they probably wouldn't say to somebody's face. That's one of the negative or downsides from asynchronous communication, where you don't have the feedback of somebody's face, their crestfallen look or whatever. It's very important when somebody says something that sounds ignorant or it sounds rude, it may just be that your filter, your cultural filter, is what's making you perceive it. Just like Owen and Pedro, they were both really angry at each other. They probably thought the other guy was such a big jerk. But guess what? Neither of them were these white doves because they inadvertently engaged in a behavior that was inappropriate for the other person. And none of them were right or wrong. even though you might sympathize more with one or the other. Their expectations were different. I'm sure that if they were able to unpack this conversation and untangle it, they would realize they probably have a lot more in common than that little moment where they had that misunderstanding.
Well, Maria, that's certainly a golden nugget. And folks, if you've also found this moment a golden nugget and found this conversation enlightening, I encourage you to share this episode with your friends and family and fellow Toastmasters. You can find the Toastmasters podcast at toastmasterspodcast.com, toastmasters.org, Apple, Spotify, and anywhere you get your podcasts. And don't forget to check out Maria's article, Untangling Cultural Knots, How to Turn Misunderstandings into Bridges Between Cultures, in the February 2026 issue of the Toastmaster magazine. Before we go, Maria, if you could enlighten us as to where people can find out more about your book about untangling cultural knots and how to reach out to you if they want to learn more about the topic.
My book, Untangling Communication, is available on Amazon or wherever you order your books. You can find me on LinkedIn. My last name is Garaitanandia, G-A-R. And the longest last name you find there with a G is me. You can also find me on my website, either globalbridgestraining.com or mariagaraitanandia.com.
And Maria will certainly put a link for everyone in the show notes. And I love the fact that you gave me the pronunciation of your name as Go Right to Nandia. And I have that written right in front of me.
That's what my sister said. Just imagine you're giving directions to go right to a place called Nandia, not Narnia.
Well, Maria, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today. We'll certainly put a link to all the information that you left for us in the show notes, and all the best with your new book.
Thank you so much, Greg.